So, is this on? Is this on? Yeah. Is it on now? Can you hear me? Okay. So, I'm just a little hesitant to go on too long since they have to set up the stage. So, I'll be brief. This is an optional talk, and you, of course, some people did ask optional compared to what? So this is the way I've planned it. The little in the title describes, qualifies guide and not string theory or string theorist. And what I thought is that particularly for our international visitors, it would be nice to give a brief description of what a rag is and what Indian classical music is like. I'll not dwell on historical or technical aspects at all, and I apologize in advance to people who know about Indian music in any form, because what I say will not be very profound or original. I'll confine myself to the North Indian musical tradition that's called Hindustani music, and I wrote it slightly wrong. The tradition that I'll be describing, for example, the concert you'll hear today, or also concerts that are performed currently in India, probably took their form in the last couple of centuries, but the concept of a rag is much, much older than that, and there are treatises as old as 800 AD which expound on the concept of rag. On the other hand, a lot of classification was done in the 20th century, so the subject is still evolving. The basic tradition here is a performance of a rag by an instrument or a voice, accompanied by drums called tablas. The tabla is a pair of drums played with the hands. And it's really a pleasure also for us to have a program of this music here, because I think most people would agree that this is one of the Indian traditions that's most unique and survives in an extremely authentic form. The musicians who are going to perform today are extremely distinguished. I won't be saying more about today's concert, because I'll leave that to Atish, who's going to introduce it, and the musicians. Okay, Indian music is fundamentally monophonic. That means there's only one melodic line. There is essentially no concept of harmony, and any other sounds other than the main musical note are intended for resonance. In this, it differs from Western music, and probably this is why the melody line was developed so far. In the absence of harmony, this was the one direction to go. The notes are the same essentially as the Western scale. So if you recognize that little sketch of a piano keyboard, there are 12 notes, counting seven white up to there and five black. And the interval in Western music between one note and the next one is the ratio is 2:1/12. That's called the tempered scale. But in Indian music, it's common to play a little bit with this. And even for different rags, you might vary the location of notes slightly. But basically, they fall in this scale. The notes themselves are discrete, but people who perform always use instruments, or in the case of a voice, it's natural that there's some vibration around a note. There are also smooth glides from one note to the next. So for a first-time listener, it's sometimes hard to anchor exactly where the notes are, but there are definite discrete notes. Now, this is the key, perhaps this is the conclusions of my talk in a sense. Okay, sorry. So what is a rag? It's something that many people have tried to define. I've given my own sort of intuitive definition. It has three characteristics. One, technical, that it has a subset of the 12 possible notes in the scale, and that subset has at least five notes. The second is that there should be a set of rules specifying what notes can be played in what order, what allowed sequences of notes are present, and they can be different for the ascending and descending scales. And the third, which is of course the whole point, is that this should add up to some meaningful mood. That's why it's very difficult to define further. But I think when you hear it, you'll sort of see what all this means. Every rag has a distinguished name. The names can be from various aspects of mythology or even geography. It can be named after a season, it can be named after a person or a god or whatever. When you listen to a rag, what you have to do, so by the way, I'm not going to do any demonstrations or singing here. I wouldn't want you to leave the conference prematurely. What you have to focus on when you listen is which notes are being played out of these 12 in the scale. For a given rag, there'll be some distinguished subset which will be played and others will be strictly omitted. Which orderings of these notes are favored and what sort of mood is being conveyed. And obviously, it takes a lot of listening to get the hang of it. Some of the simplest rags to define have just 5 notes out of the 12. And for some reason, these are very, some of them at least, are very deep. Because they have such a simple basic structure, somehow they convey a very profound mood. I cannot really say more than that. There can be more than 5 notes, 6, 7, 8, 9, and so on. A little side observation. Rags have often been illustrated in painting, particularly Rajasthani painting. Since much of this conference has been in Rajasthan last week, you might have actually seen these in museums. So for example, here's one. I don't know if this is a very good copy. So I'm sorry, it's not a very good printout. It was taken at the last minute. But this is the Ragini Bhairavi. So this rag is female. And well, you can see her in her shrine of crystal worshipping Shiva with songs punctuated by the beat. So this is just to show that the personality of rags is often expressed as people or as even seasons and sort of natural things. How many rags are there? That's a subject of debate, but at a very rough estimate, I'd say there are about 50 very common, another 100 fairly common, and another 200 sort of somewhat exotic, so on the order of 300 to 400. There are so-called pure rags, which are distinguished by a particular structure, as I described, and then there are mixed rags, where one structure is evident at a given time and the structure of another rag is evident at another time in the performance. And somehow this is supposed to flow seamlessly from one structure to the other. The rag in that case will carry both the names. It will just be a hyphenated name, A-B. Okay. Now, rags have a definite association with the time of day, which is quite an interesting fact. And as you'll see, most of the rags actually fall into a slot which allows one a full working day in between. 6 to 9 is one very popular slot for rags. And these actually, to most people who listen, sound very jarring if heard in the evening. Now, whether it's a pure convention or there's something in their structure, I cannot say. There's a whole set of them from 6 to 9 in the evening. Those are typically very soothing and good to relax to after a hard day. And then 9 to midnight and also midnight to 3 a.m. And there are some also from 3 to 6 a.m. It's obvious that this is when people were listening to music and not mostly not in the middle of the day. Rags can also be seasonal. If they're seasonal, then they can be played at any time of day during that season. Malhar is a very classic one. The word Malhar itself to any Indian will conjure up the monsoon. And the rag has some kind of feeling which it conveys, which reminds you of rain, clouds, and so on. In singing compositions, the words also will talk about monsoon situations like rain, clouds, and so on. Now, this is very important. The full elaboration of a rag on a musical instrument usually proceeds in the following order. The starting is a slow movement. By the way, this whole thing from 1 to 4 can last an hour. It can last 2 hours. I've rarely heard it go beyond 2 hours, but it can last as long as that. Of course, in modern recordings, people also have truncated this to half an hour. Can be done. There are the following, roughly speaking, following movements. The first is a very slow, leisurely introduction. And indeed, in India, it's very common for people to just walk in the middle of this thing. And you're sometimes not even sure that something's happening. I mean, it doesn't start with a bang. It's not like there's one moment when it starts. It seems to build up very gradually. But once it builds up, so in this case, the instrumentalist will play without the tabla coming into it. So the person who's playing the tabla will just sit on the side and do nothing, essentially. And in the second movement, which builds up gradually from the first one, the exploration will become a little faster, and there'll be a little bit of rhythm slowly emerging, but still without accompaniment. Then between 2 and 3, there's a definite break, because 3 introduces the composition, which is, very roughly speaking, a song or a tune. which will be played on the instrument, and then the drum accompaniment comes in. And it's most common to start with a very, very slow composition. So the rhythm will be in a speed like 1, 2, that slow, okay? On the other hand, so then in section 4, it will speed up, and you may have a rhythm in a speed like 1, 2, 3, 4, or even then much, much faster than that. So there's a logical progression, and it's all done sort of continuously, except that in 3, the tabla player typically wakes up and starts to do something, and then remains involved till the end of the piece. For lighter rags, it's common to skip some of these movements, and then there may be just the middle one, which is like a tune in medium tempo. Now, this is just the structure of how the performance can look, but the really important thing in it is that very little of this is structured in advance. There is a basic tune, but and you'll hear that tune, you would hear that tune repeated, but then the entire performance consists of improvisations around that tune. And it's the improvisations which make the performance. Okay. So this is an extremely spontaneous form of music. In that sense, and perhaps only in that sense, it resembles jazz a little bit. So therefore, from the same artist, different performances of the same rag will sound completely different. Now, a very important thing is the concept of taal or rhythm. There are rhythmic cycles in Indian music. These are cycles of a fixed number of beats, which then return to the beginning. The beats can be 4 or 6. There are cycles actually in every number of beats, at least from 4 to 16, as far as I know, including 7 and so on. And when people play the tabla, I'll just talk about the tabla in a few seconds, they actually play what you might call rhythmic notes, which have definite names. I've given you some of the names here. I'll just read them out. Dha, dhin, ta, tin, tu, ghe, ke, tit. Now, what these mean, well, it's it will be very obvious when you hear them. These are just the spoken form of the sound made when you hit the tabla in one of different ways. Okay, so one cycle will be a collection of these notes arranged in a specific way, and after some number of beats, it will come back to the beginning. Okay. Now, the first note of the cycle is extremely important. It's called sum, and this you'll see repeatedly in any performance, that whenever the things start to stray a little bit or variations build up, then at some point there's a return to this first beat called sum. Okay. A musical performance, sometimes people think of a performance with, say, one instrument and tabla as a duet. It would be wrong to think that way. The tabla in music is really an accompanying instrument. So the leader is always the instrumentalist who's either singing or playing an instrument. Today, on the other hand, you will actually hear a duet of equal partners, one sitar and one violin. The tabla will be an accompanying instrument. Tabla, on the other hand, in dance plays a much more prominent role, and it sort of, I mean, it's much more, in a sense, leading in that context. Here, the musician will play and the tabla will follow. Once in a while, the tabla does some variation, and at that time, the musician will stop doing something interesting and just accompany while the tabla player will exhibit variations. So this is more or less the structure of the performance. And with that, I just want to say a few words about the instruments and I'm done. Now, actually, I'm not saying much about the violin, because the violin in Indian music was basically imported from the West, and it's quite the same violin. It has 4 strings played with a bow, doesn't have frets. The sitar is rather different. It has 2 kinds of strings. It has one set on a higher level and another set on a lower level under the frets. Okay? The ones above are the ones that are actually played. The ones below resonate sympathetically with the notes that are played above. Now, today what you'll see is that the musician will be playing this string, the red one that you see here. That's the lowest. This is the angle at which it's normally held and played, and we'll be striking the lowest string with one finger and playing on the with the left hand. All the middle strings don't do very much. They just resonate. The last 2 strings are struck from the back this way, and they provide a kind of punctuation to the music. The left hand sits on the fret. Like a guitar, where you place it will tell you what note you get. But since these frets are curved like this, you can actually pull the string, much as is done in Western music, say in blues, for example. You can pull the string and you get a gradual glide. But in this case, and particularly Shahid Parvez specializes in this, you can go as many as 5 or even 6 semitones up. So a vocal quality comes into the music. It sounds like a voice. Okay, he specializes in making his sitar sound like a human voice in parts of the performance. The tabla is just a pair of drums. They're struck with the hands. It has to be actually tuned, and it's tuned by banging with a hammer. I actually managed to destroy my own tablas by doing that. You have to bang in the right place, apparently. And different sounds are produced by striking the surface at different points. So this is how the surface looks. It's a sort of top view. This is the right tabla. That's the left tabla. For tabla players who have opposite chirality, they would switch the tablas around. This one, so this black spot in the middle of the right one, this is some kind of resin-coated thing which gives a different frequency or different sound to the middle part. So it's actually pasted over the skin that surrounds it. And depending whether you strike the edge, or you strike that region, or you strike the middle region, or you strike with more than one finger, you get different kinds of sounds. The left one is actually a bass drum. So it's struck with the front, these fingers. And typically, you press on it with the heel of your hand and strike it like this. Or you may strike it with the flat of your hand. Okay, and both are played together. So in most of the during the performance, both are played at the same time. The name of the notes that I read out to you earlier, like dha and dhin, are determined by both the actions of both hands together. Okay. So that's more or less what I have to say. I just want to end with a few quotations. So a book written in 800 AD by Matanga, I've forgotten the reference, says, "In the opinion of the wise, that particularity of notes and melodic movements, or that distinction of melodic sound by which one is delighted, is rag." Now, this is actually a completely tautological definition, but I think it's useful to see that all along people recognized in some sense the impossibility of defining it very precisely. This person, on the other hand, said something more relevant for the audience here. "The features of rags are hard to put into words, and they must be experienced for oneself." And finally, a warning which probably I should have taken more seriously. "The profoundly learned in raga have not cross the ocean of raga, how then may one of little understanding swim across?" So with that profound thought, I'll leave you. I'm really not sure we have time for questions, but maybe at tea time if there are any. Oh, 7:30. Is there a reason for that? They can set up the stage by 7:15, I'm sure. I talked to them already. I mean, it may be delayed by till 7.